Jazakum Allah khair. May Allah reward you for attending the first session of this new course, which is entitled Principles of Islamic Family Building. And in today's class, we're going to be talking about what this whole class is all about and what are some of the goals and what does it mean to do Islamic family building and why is it important? Basically, this is my chance to do marketing for the class because we live in that type of world, unfortunately, where everything has to be marketed. No, but actually, it is important for us to understand, like, what is this topic? Why is it important? And what does it entail? And on that basis, we can decide whether this is for us or it's not for us. Okay. I did receive a number of people contacting me, like, you know, both locally and also outside of the Bay Area, expressing interest in this class. A number of people said that for whatever reason, the timing doesn't work for them, but they are going to, inshallah, be following along in the recorded session. So they're going to get the archive. So for those of you who are present and you don't see a whole bunch of people here, don't worry, you're inshallah going to be accompanied by others. And anyways, what really matters isn't the number. It's what matters is really that genuine interest in this very important topic that we have. Okay, so every class, what I try to do is I try to begin with a bit of spiritual inspiration for us and kind of a reminder. Usually I take it from Quran or Hadith. And it's just something that, you know, it inshallah, by beginning this way, like, it lends a certain like spiritual flavor to our discussion. And alhamdulillah, we're blessed today to have Brother Mahdi with us as well. So inshallah, he can maybe begin with reciting these verses, and then we'll talk a little bit about them. Bismillah.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأقبل بعضهم على بعض يتساءلون قالوا إنا كنا قبل في أهلنا مشفقين فمن الله علينا ووقعنا عذاب السموم إنا كنا من قبل ندعوه إنه هو البر الرحيم صدق الله العلي العظيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Thank you so much, Brother Mehdi. تقبل الله. So these verses are some of the ayahs in the Quran which really are hope-giving, especially to parents who are taking that trouble and that extra effort to spend time raising their kids. So it's a scene from the hereafter where Allah describes people who are in heaven. And he says that they will turn to one another, questioning each other. Now, what are they asking about? What are they concerned about? The commentators say that based on the context, they're asking about what is it that they did to allow them to enter heaven. So then a group of them will say that we indeed used to have ishfaq towards our families. Now, the word ishfaq, when it's used with fi, it means when you have like concern and you're paying attention to something, you're like taking care of it, you're putting in like effort to like, you know, really like, it's like you're treating it like something valuable, as opposed to like another use of ishfaq, which would mean like fearful. Here it means more of like being concerned in a way that you care about something. So then as a result of that, Allah says that Allah showed them favor and he saved us from the punishment of the infernal miasma. We used to supplicate him from before. Indeed, he is all benign and all merciful. So as a result of their concern and care for their family, Allah gave them paradise. And they used to like make dua as well too, and then Allah showed them this kindness. Now, it's interesting, if you look at Allama Tabatabai, rahmatullahi alayhi, what he says about this idea of concern, he says that, like he's explaining, like what does it mean that they used to have this ishfaq? So he says, we used to give special consideration to their spiritual prosperity and their deliverance from the destruction of misguidance. Like we used to spend time on this. What can we put into place so that our children will be saved from misguidance, right? So they're actively working on this. We lived with them in a beautiful manner, right? The way that our conduct with them, our behavior towards them, our companionship towards them, it was all beautiful. We would give them good advice. We would call them towards the truth and distance them from falsehood. These are the things that they did. And as a result of that, Allah gave them paradise. That was the reward of it. So this is one of those things which like really like I feel like it, for parents, they can refer to this as very hope-giving, that their efforts are noticed, their efforts are inshallah rewarded. And I think it's a very good start to our course, which is about this very topic, which is relating to tarbiyah or upbringing or family building. How do we raise children according to the principles of the Quran and the hadith? Now, in terms of the class agenda, what my request is that if we can arrive by 6:50 to 6:55, there's some setup that we could use help with, as you can see. And then at 7 o'clock, we can start the recitation of Qur'an. 7:05, there will be a spiritual reminder. And these are all in Pacific time. And then about 45 minutes of presentation. From 7:50 to 8 o'clock, a question and answer. And then I'd like to be around for about 10 minutes for more informal question and answer, where maybe some people have like specific situations they want some feedback on. That's a good time to ask about those. Now, just like in the previous course that we had, there will be a Google Classroom for this class. So if you're joining this class as a class, like you're taking it like because you want to be a student, you want to learn in a progressive manner, you want to like have an opportunity to like do the homework and really think about the content that's being presented. My request is for you to join the Google Classroom. In order to join, you go to the website classroom.google.com and you put in the class code ZLX66VZ. That's ZLX66VZ. Okay, and there you'll have to put in your email address and, you have to sign in through Google and then you'll be added to the classroom. Once you're part of the classroom, inshallah, you won't get any spam mail, we won't send any advertisement, but you will get access to the class notes, you'll get access to weekly homework, and you will get access to the course text, which is these slides, so one and the same thing. The class recordings will be on the Saba YouTube channel. If you are in this class as an auditor, like you just want to be attending just to be there, you know, like just to kind of listen and maybe take something, but you don't want to do the homework, that's okay as well. But my recommendation is that you do join if you are planning on attending regularly, because that way it will be a better opportunity for you to learn. I think the door is closed there. So, okay, now in terms of the dates and timings, so Tuesdays, starting today until July 12th, excluding 2 days, because those days we have like occasions in the Islamic calendar, and a total of 8 classes. The text will be based on the course slides. Homework will be assigned weekly. I'm going to try to assign homework the next day of the class, inshallah. So you'll have 6 days to do it. The homework will be, inshallah, a little bit more practical. Like, what would you do in this scenario? Or what do you think? Not theoretical as such. Like, putting this into practice for yourself. So it gives you a chance to think about it, talk about it. If you do have a spouse, you talk about it with them, discuss with them. If you do have children, then it gets you a chance to also think about what's happening with your children. And that's really the best way of taking what we're learning and acting upon it, is to think about your situation. But even if you don't have children, even if you're not married yet, these are things that are very good to be thinking about from now. In terms of attendance, obviously the request is if you would like to benefit fully from the class, then you attend regularly. If for whatever reason you can't make it, then you catch up, listen to the recording afterwards. In these days, you know, there's sort of like this type of approach to learning where it's like express, you know, like try to, you know, instant pot sort of learning. So, you know, we do things like fast forward through the YouTube video. We do things like just looking at, you know, looking at when the slide changes and we pause there. We're like, oh, I understand the bullet points, and then do it that way. The way that I like to structure my courses is that the audio component is very necessary. Like it's, I'm just putting up like some high level bullet points, but a lot of times like it's the points that are said. And then a lot of times the questions that come from the students, like those really add a lot of value to the discussion. So the request is to like actually spend that 45 minutes or 50 minutes or 55 minutes actually like listening. Punctuality is very important because you know how it is when people walk in late. I understand that, you know, there's traffic incidents a lot, and some people are coming from very far distance. They go to work, they go back home, they bring their families. So I get that. So if you're late, nobody's like saying that it's your fault, or we totally understand. But if you can, you know, if it's within your control, then try to be punctual. It's just beneficial. It'll lead to a better class experience, inshallah. Participation is good. I really enjoy that when people, you know, contribute their thoughts, they ask questions, especially during the Q&A at the end. So if you have something that's like a good question, probably better to save it for then. But sometimes there's like a burning thing, or there's like a real, like maybe I made a mistake on the slide or something, or there's something you really need, you feel like it'd be beneficial for everyone to ask, please go ahead and ask it. And that's what we did in our last class, and it really was beneficial, alhamdulillah. At the end of this course, inshallah, those who do the homework, so the added benefit is that you're going to get a certificate for class completion. Okay, you can take that certificate, you can print it out, you can put it up on your mantelpiece, and you can be, I finished a class, right? No, seriously, I'm going to give you a certificate. And we're also working towards getting this class accredited. So you would actually get like credit that you can use at a post-secondary institution for taking this class. But you have to do the homework, though, and you have to attend the classes. It's pretty cool, right? I mean, you know, that's added incentive. Like for, you know, and then so when you go to get your master's degree in, I don't know, child psychology, you can be like, yeah, I have this class as well, right? Okay, and then childcare. There was some questions about, are we going to have childcare or not? I couldn't arrange it myself. Like, meaning that it's just beyond my capacity to arrange it. If we do have any volunteers who are willing to take that challenge and kind of organize it, like talk to like babysitters, hire them, you know, organize the funding part of it, please do approach us after the class and let us know. But just it's something I couldn't do it myself, and I didn't know whom to ask. So if you want to help out in that regard, then please let us know. Okay. In terms of the syllabus, so today the main topics are around the importance of this class. Why are we here? Why should we stay here? Okay. Islamic tarbiyah versus non-Islamic tarbiyah, and how to approach the tarbiyah principles that we have. And I'm hoping that this will be a useful discussion for all of us, inshallah. Some of the other topics that I'm hoping to address are having a warm and peaceful home environment. What are some of the things that we can do to achieve that? Love, respect, dignity when it comes to the Islamic understanding of them and applying them when dealing with others, especially children. The topic of independence and freedom. How is it that as parents, like, we deal with this? Because this is something that is very, like, kind of significant. You know, how much freedom do we give? What is the importance of giving that freedom? To what extent? And then one of the topics that I'm hoping to be able to address is Islamic guidance for before and after childbirth. And the reason for that is because just based on experience, there seems to be a lack of awareness about some of the things that are really crucial. And there's really important segments in the upbringing of children where it's not being addressed because we haven't talked about it. So let's see if we can get to that. Okay, so the Islamic approach to family building and tarbiyah. I'm going to begin with this ayah from Surah Taha. Allah says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قال ربنا الذي أعطى كل شيء خلقه ثم هدى. So even though most of our class is going to be more along the practical sense of things, like how do I take these things and apply them? In general, if you looked at those topics, they're about like actually putting them into practice. But in every practical discussion, if you don't have that theory, then it's not going to have that much meaning. So you need to be able to connect it back to something, like an understanding of things. And in Islam, there's a certain perspective on child raising. And this is one of the most profound ayahs of the Quran that gives us that perspective. Okay, first of all, it starts with God. Okay, tarbiyah begins with God and His plan for His creation. Allah creates and He creates on the basis of divine wisdom. And one who is wise does not do things in vain. They do things purposefully. So therefore, every act of God, including creation, has a purpose and a goal in it. That means that every being has a certain goal to which it's supposed to achieve, and it has that capability to achieve that goal. Because if God created and He didn't give that capability, and He said that, no, you need to get to this place, but He didn't give that being that goal, that means that God would not be doing things in a wise manner. So it's about a plan of God for His creation. So where do the parents come in? Right? The parents come in this bridge between what is the potential and what is the actual. Meaning what is meant to be achieved and what is actually achieved, by preparing the grounds for that connection to be made. Who's doing that connection? God's making that connection. But the parents are creating that, you know, sort of the conduit for it to happen. So tarbiyah is the process of preparing the grounds for the realization of someone's potential in order for them to reach their God-given goal. So that's what we're talking about here. Now, when you talk about Islamic principles, what are we talking about? We're talking about general guidelines that are based on the Quran, Hadith, and well-established Islamically grounded understandings of the human being, human development, family life, and society. Okay, now, what we're talking about are things like, you know, let's say around when it comes to, you know, the idea of 777, right? So these are things which are well-established, right? There's numerous, you know, traditions about that. It's something which, you know, every major figure in human psychology, even if those who didn't have a religious background, they all said that, okay, yeah, there's a 777 thing going on here as well, right? So that's what we mean by a principle. Now, every principle comes along with its limits as well. So let's say we talk about the importance of showing love to children and how to show that love, right? Then we'll also talk about, well, where does it go past that limit? What's the extreme version of it? Because that's important to understand when we're talking about these principles. Now, there's some points that we have to understand which will help us in terms of understanding the importance of this class. One of them is that the Islamic principles for tarbiyah, they work together as part of a system. You know, kind of like you could say like in a car, you have all these different systems that need to work together in order for the car to operate. Similarly, in order for a parent's tarbiyah, if for their upbringing to actually be effective, multiple principles have to come and they have to be interoperating, have to be working together. Okay, I'll give you a couple of examples that have been pointed out by some of the great scholars in this field. You all know that, you know that one of the ways that people, when they want to like show children, like parents, when they want to show children that they're not okay with what the child is doing, one of the techniques that's used is what's called qahr, or like where you basically like you sort of put a chill on your interaction with them. And that could be by like not being as jovial as you were before. It could be where you're not smiling as much as you did before. It could even be like where you're quieter, right? Or even that you stop talking for some time with them, depending on the severity of that thing. Okay. Now, it's used by, you know, people who don't have a religious sense for it. They just do it, right? It's something that's a natural thing, right? And sometimes it's used as an excuse, right? Because it's a lot easier to just retreat into your own shell than to actually like deal with something and to actually address it and deal with it properly. Okay, now, interestingly enough, we're actually told in hadith that this is one of the acceptable means of doing tarbiyah. It's one of the acceptable approaches to take. Okay, but with its conditions and with its limits. So please don't take me wrong here. And we're not going into all the details of it, but just to quickly mention, one of the things is that it shouldn't last very long. Okay, and second of all, like it has to come with other things that are there. So, the other thing is it has to be something, a severe case. It's not just like that you're doing it all the time, and it should not last that long either. Okay, now, let's say that somebody hears this hadith and they run with it. They're like, yeah, all right, I learned this hadith. It's from Imam Kadhim alayhi salam. When I, rather than striking my child, I can have this sort of thing where I, like, let's say, I put a chill on my relationship with them. Okay, and they start using it and they realize that, hey, it's not working, right? When my child actually enjoys it when I stop talking to them, right? Because I'm nagging them so much before, like, yeah, this is awesome, right? And then like, I'm not playing with my child anymore. I'm not talking to them. So I go on my device, right? And my child looks at me and like, oh, okay. So that's what we do when we go into this thing. This is fun, right? I'm going to grab my device as well too. And bismillah, right? It's like a big party, right? Obviously you're not accomplishing the goal here. Right, so what's going on here? What's wrong, right? Where is the problem in this, right? So maybe I'm going to put that up and maybe oppose it to the students who are present today. So what do you? Where's the missing piece here? Imam Kadhim alayhi salam, for example, he's saying that this is a valid technique, right? When is it valid? What's the precursor for this? Can somebody say? Sorry? Okay, definitely that's one case. That you know, as a parent, you're like, hey, this is going to result in like the opposite. I'm not going to do it. But the imam is giving this to us as a guideline and as a technique. But in what case would it be effective? Like, he wouldn't give it to us if there wasn't going to be effective in any case. So when would it be effective? Yes. Exactly. Ahsant, right? So Brother Hassam says that when you have that very healthy, loving relationship in place, where for the child, it would be mean a lot if they were to see that their parent is not like giving them that same amount of love temporarily. And of course, it's not something which is going to create a major thing in their life, just temporarily, right? They're like, oh my God, this parent who's always been like, you know, there for me, smiling, or that, and they're right? That's something which, okay, I need to fix my behavior. I understood this right now. And as soon as that parent sees that the child has understood it, then they go back to normal. They don't have to wait even necessarily for the child to like give them a written apology or, you know, buy them a present or give them a bottle of sparkling apple juice or something like that, right? Mission accomplished, right? It might take 5 minutes, okay? By the way, this is not a technique which is meant to be used for young children, right? Because young children can't even understand this thing, right? So you see how there's a system in place right there. Of young children. Young children, like, I mean, we're talking about, like, definitely in the first 4 years, no. Okay. And then maybe now, like, you know, from the age 4 to 7, like, but very sparingly, but definitely, like, this is more for, like, past 7 years old, right? That's when this type of thing can be very effective, right? Okay. All right. Now, another example is leading by example. So, okay. You probably have all heard of this, that in hadith we're told that we should ask our children to start praying at what age? At the age of? Seven, right? So alhamdulillah, so 7 years old, right? Okay, now, we're also, in the hadith also says that if by the age of 9 they're not praying, then we should actually punish them, okay? All right, now, you know, that's one of those hadith where it's like, oh, really? Okay, because it's very difficult for people to swallow, right? So first of all, you know, what does it mean to punish them, right? Does it mean like you take out your belt and you're like, obviously that's not, right? But what the way that the, you know, the those experts in tarbiyah, the way they explain it is this, that it's kind of like a clap on the back, right? It's like, you know, like at times when, as parents, you'll find that one of the very effective things to do when you want to convey something important to your child is to make physical contact with them. Like you put your hand on their head or you put your hand on their arm and then you talk to them. That itself is very significant, right? It, when you want to really make a point, you make that physical contact. In fact, we're told in hadith as well too that when you have anger towards a relative, like somebody who has blood relations with you, one of the ways of soothing that anger is to like make that physical contact with them, and vice versa as well. If you notice that your child is very upset at something, if you go and you just make that physical contact, there's things that are happening that will soothe them. Okay. Now, if you have a clap on the back, right, when there's something which is very important, right, then the idea is, okay, this is a way of punishing them. Okay. But why though? And why is that important? Now, again, this depends on what happened before that, right? It should be the case that the child already has a positive impression of the prayer, right? It should be the case that everything that's been modeled for them is one of like, hey, why would I not want to pray, right? So that when they get physically mature and mentally mature, it just falls into place, right? And this is the system that like has been set up. And I'm not going into the details of how that's supposed to happen, but I'm just saying that if we follow the steps. Now, let's say that, you know, the child is 10 or 11 years old, and for, let's say, you know, an extended period of time, they're just completely disregarding the prayers, right? Now, if they have this really, really good image of the prayer that's been developed until now, you know, they've grown up with the sounds of it, right? The sounds and sights are very important in the way when a child grows up. So they've been hearing the adhan from the time that, it wasn't just when they were born they heard the adhan, right? But they hear it in the house, like, you know, at least 3 times a day, they're hearing the adhan being read out loud. It's very important, right? Not just through a device. I'm talking about like the human voice hearing it. This is part of their identity. And now they see that their parents, okay, their father or their mother, let's say, for example, in this case, they're getting upset at them, right? It's a big deal, right? And that one act should be enough to like, you know, okay, that's it, right? But not something where that's applied and the other things are not applied. Okay, so my point is that the principles that are given to us, they work as part of a system. And sometimes one principle can override another principle, right? That's why, like, what might work for you does not necessarily work for the other person. Okay, and this is also very important. You know, like, sometimes, especially younger mothers of younger children, right, they like to compare notes, right? Like, this is what's working, and this is what for my child, and what's working the other child. And then sometimes you come up, you're like, oh man, like, you know, am I like just like this terrible parent? Because everything is like falling in place for them and like nothing for me. And like, what's going on here, right? And this is where, like, when we have this broader understanding, like, things will start to fall into place for us, right? And again, it goes back to like this thing that we're not the creator, right? We're not the Rabb. We're not the one who is doing that nurturing, right? We are simply facilitating God doing his work, right? And how he created one person versus another, it differs. And by understanding these things, it helps us to understand, okay, what's different? Maybe somebody's family situation is unique, right? Like, I mean, let's face the fact that, like, you know, we're living at a time where we do have like families where, you know, for example, the parents are going through a rough time, or, you know, there's some other circumstances, right? So obviously they're going to have to take these principles, and some of them will have to be adapted, and sometimes one of them will override the other one. Okay. And the final point is that there's a difference between the principle and the application, right? And sometimes people are like, well, you know, I've heard these things, I've read the books, right? And I'm done with that. Now I need to go on to other things. I need more, because it's not working for me. I'm still like struggling like so much when it comes to my kids. One thing I want to just caution, brothers and sisters, is that wherever we are at in terms of our knowledge of Islamic principles regarding family building, there is a difference between knowing the principle and applying it. And a lot of times, as they say, the devil is in the details, right? Or that's where the work is, right? Like, you take this principle and you're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. You know, I was doing this the whole time. I needed to think, like, for example, let's say that, you know, sometimes like we might be very particular about the way our children dress, right? So we're like, from before, we choose all their outfits, okay? And we're very particular about it. And then one day, like, our child, like, let's say, you know, is like, no, I want it to be like this, right? And we make a big deal about it, right? And then, you know, you start learning more about like the principle of freedom and how that ties into dignity. And then you're like, you know what? I didn't realize that in this thing, it's something that's so trivial, right? Like, my parents always like would choose outfits until I was like, let's say, you know, 12 years old or whatever like that, or 10 years old or 8 years old or whatever, right? Now I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? This is one thing that I need to revisit this, right? So this is the way that, you know, parents will sometimes, even it takes like one child or two children, and then by your third child, you're like, okay, I got to fix this thing, right? I didn't realize that with the other children, I was actually doing the wrong thing when it comes to these things. So that's something that is motivation. Here I see in this gathering, we have people who have no children. We have people who have one child. We have people who have multiple children, people who have older children, younger children, right? So the idea, some people are asking that, like, okay, is this only for parents who, let's say, have young children in the first 7 years, or is it going to apply to people who are in the second stage of development and third stage of development? The answer to that is that these principles do apply to children at all ages up until the age of 21, but obviously the application is going to be different depending on the age they're in. Okay, now, when we know these principles, then it helps us to answer a lot of specifics, you know. And one of the things that in today's sort of instant generation, right, what we do is like we want to get instant answers to our questions. So let's say, for example, like I have a question about, like, let's say my child and homework, right? So should I force my child to do homework? So I searched it up on Google. Psychology Today has this article by a psychologist. They're like, okay, this is the way you should deal with your child when it comes to homework. Here's your 5 tips for success, right? And you go for it. You're like, okay, alhamdulillah, I got that, right? And then you're like, okay, well, what about media control? And I'm like, okay, I'm going to look in New York Times, has this article about screen time now, you know, in the post-pandemic era. Forget about screen time limits, right? Okay, alhamdulillah, I got that down. I'm going to go with that, okay? That approach to coming up with like strategies for raising children is not an ideal approach, okay? It results in a lot of issues, and some of them I'm sure, you know, you can see, and, you know, we could talk about that, inshallah, a little bit later. But the Islamic approach is that, you know, you're not going to find a hadith about every one of your problems and every issue that comes up. It's not going to be that way. But what you are going to find is general principles where, if you understand them well, it's going to give you a way to answer a lot of different specifics. Okay, so let's take an example. The principle of independence and freedom. You know, the idea that Islam puts a lot of emphasis on this, like, a part of human dignity is being able to make your choices. That's why God created us, right? So we want to preserve dignity. Therefore, we have to give children that freedom. But at the same time, right, we all know that if you give children, you know, freedom without limits, then that's going to cause problems as well. So we come to like this really good understanding of what is that principle? Where is the red lines? When does it not apply, right? How do I take that and also like guide them towards a certain direction that I want them to go to, right? How do I make sure that I'm still doing my job as a parent while I'm giving them freedom? Let's say I got that down. Now I come to these questions like, for example, how much should I care about how messy my kids get, right? You hear this a lot, like for example, in certain cultures especially, like I live with my parents and my parents are super picky about like my children like making a big mess about things, right? So what do I do in this case right here? They get upset and all these things. So I'm really particular about my children, not making a mess. When do I start teaching my child about manners, right? Like what is this concept of manners in Islam? Like, is it important? When does it start? What is that age? How strict should I be on media control? Should I force my child to do homework? What are the major changes I need to make in preparation for developmental stage changes? Like, let's say that my child now is moving towards 6-7 years old, right? So how do I need to change my strategy, right? Now they're moving towards the teenage years. Okay, how do I need to change my strategy? All these things start to become clear when I get the principle down really well, right? Because again, I'm not going to, and I can then turn to that principle as opposed to going to like, you know, a person with like, you know, PhD and whatever like that, and saying that you be the one who's my prophet on this matter. Now, they might have some useful things to say, especially about how to apply some of the principles, but I shouldn't go to them. They shouldn't be my first go-to for what that principle is. Okay, there's another principle, which is, you know, Islamic tarbiyah is one of like taking a gradual approach to change, right? You don't do things suddenly when you want to like shift things for your children. Like, let's say, for example, you want to you realize that your children have been having too much screen time, rather than just going cold turkey, you go and you ease them away from that. You know, let's say, for example, the cry out method, right? That I'm sure, you know, everyone's heard about before, right? Like, let's, you know, a lot of times it's prescribed, right? Like physicians will say that your best approach is just let your children cry it out. Okay. Now, if you think about it, right, this child who was in the womb of their mother being taken care of, you know, completely, just everything was there for them. It's like, you know, all accommodations, you know, 7-star luxury hotel accommodation, everything's there, right? And now they're coming out from that womb, and now they're told that when you cry, you're just going to cry, right? And nobody's going to come and take care of you. You're going to do self-soothing, right? You're like, well, that doesn't work with this idea of gradual changes in tarbiyah. Yes, one day they're going to have to be able to fend for their own. They're going to have to be able to, like, you know, kind of deal with issues that come up, but not on their first day or the first week or the first month or the first, you know, I mean, come on, like, this kid, this is just a child, a baby here, right? So when we understand this, then things like, okay, how do I respond to their crying? When do I separate them into their own sleeping environment, right? When should I teach them things like memorizing Quran, like or reading or math? Like I'm struggling for them to learn the ABCs, and after like a lot of effort, like at 3 years old, my child knows the ABCs. Okay, is that an accomplishment? Or have I actually maybe caused some harm by forcing them to like learn these things? When do I introduce the rules of Islam? Like, it's one of the beautiful things that when we look at how Islam teaches us how to gradually introduce things like prayer, fasting, and other things, we start to realize, oh, that's an approach when it comes to other things as well. It's all about gradually. And if we do it gradually, it actually works, right? But what happens when, if I don't take care of these things, and then my child is like 13 years old, it's a boy, and now is the first time I'm concerned about them praying, then, you know, that's going to be very difficult, right? It's going to be a painful sort of process. Okay, personality types. So one of the things that really helps parents is to have a basic study of personality types. Why? Because, again, God created this being, and he has created them in a certain way with certain goal in mind. Now, if I can understand some of the basics about my child's personality type, and I understand my own personality type, that can really help when it comes to my being an effective parent with them. Why? Because a lot of times we tend to reflect our own experience when dealing with our children, We're like, you know what? For example, I used to really enjoy, let's say, complicated math problems, for example. Right? My child hates math. Okay? Right? So what am I going to do? Like, am I going to get frustrated and be like, no, this is the way you should be like this, right? You should be a chip off the block, right? And we get mad at them for that, right? Or do we realize that, you know, maybe my child is, their personality type is different, right? They have a different temperament than mine, okay? And, you know, classically, like the Islamic scholars, based on just ancient wisdom, they had understood that every human being tends towards one of four different temperaments, right? So if I understand where I'm at and where my children are, it can really help then. I can then also understand what are some of the fundamental differences between my own children and how does that affect the way that I raise them? And because, you know, it can really make a difference. Sometimes, like, you know, you have one child who's like a very cranky child, right? And sometimes we're like, oh, you know, and compared to like this other kid who's always just happy-go-lucky, they're like calm, smiling all the time. And we think there's something wrong with our child or something wrong with the way that we're doing it. And actually, it goes back to realizing this, that God makes people in different temperaments, right? And so, you know, I need to come to terms with that and help them understand the challenges they're facing. There's some children who don't like to leave their comfort zone. How do I motivate them? There's children who have a lot of energy. How do I calm them down? A lot of this can help. It can help us understand if we understand their temperament. How do I guide my child to have a genuine understanding of religion? You know, we have some people, for example, who are people pleasers, right? So they do acts of religion because they want to make other people happy. Okay, and now we all know that, like, that sort of thing, if it was, you know, like when the person gets tested, right, then what's going to happen, right? Like that faith is there, but maybe it's not such a deep faith, right? On the other hand, there's other people who are, you know, they have a different type of temperament when it comes to these things, right? They are very quick to, like they're kind of like, they don't settle down with anybody. They don't look at anybody with too much admiration. They don't get attached to anybody. So they might be listening to you right now, but they're going to go to somebody else the next day, right? And that's their temperament. So if I understand that, then I work with them in a different way. So these are some things, again, which can help us to understand the principle. Another example of a principle is, you know, the different roles and responsibilities that Islam carves out when it comes to the role of the father, the role of the mother, right? When I understand that, then it helps me to come to an answer when it comes to certain life things that come up. For example, should I take this promotion that's been offered to me? Should I put my young child in daycare? Should I hire babysitters for my children so I can pursue my career goals? These things can really, if we understand what does Islam say about roles and responsibilities, that helps us to come to an understanding on these types of issues. Okay, now some people say that, you know, these principles are obvious, right? We already knew this. We already knew about things like roles and responsibility, personality types, gradual approach, independence, freedom, da-da-da, right? So what I would say is that these are intuitive. Like when I was saying them, you know, our students were kind of nodding their heads, you know, giving me visual feedback, like, yeah, that makes sense to us, right? It's intuitive, but it's not necessarily obvious. Okay, and let's really understand that. For example, you know, in the first 7 years, like the idea of really limiting my direct orders to my children, that's not something which is obvious. It's intuitive when it's explained, but not necessarily obvious. Okay? If we just do things based on what's obvious to me, then we have potentially disastrous consequences. Things like this, like I'll be Mr. or Mrs. Nice Guy. Like we have some parents who are like that. I'm just going to be the nice guy, right? Never get into any conflict. Never take a hard stand on anything, right? And, you know, we have examples of, you know, disastrous consequences when people do that. Or the opposite, like no more Mr. Nice Guy, right? Like we're going to take that approach, right? Okay, well, you know, how does that match up with, you know, the need for a child to feel that love and that really that comfort and that really that special connection with their parents? Or people who always take the silent treatment, you know, we talked about that, like that's not all right. People who are very much influenced by FOMO, like fear of missing out, you know, that I have to do what other people do, otherwise my child is going to really fall behind. So whether it be extracurricular activities, whether it be, devices, whether it be like sending them to summer camps, right? You know, you see people do a whole bunch of things, right? Why are you sending your child to music class? Well, because everyone else is doing it. Okay, well, What about the halal and haram? No, they're going to miss out. You know, music is really important for developing mathematical ability. Okay, right? So what's the really driving your thing here, right? Sometimes people have 6-7 extracurricular activities. Why? Because they want to get their kid into Stanford or Harvard or MIT. Okay, is that really, first of all, you know, is that the only way, right? And second of all, like, okay, so what about the consequences of doing that? When are you going to actually spend time with your child working on that relationship? You know, you'd be surprised how children who are raised in an environment which is caring and loving, when it comes time for them to excel, they excel in all areas, right? And, you know, if God put that capability in them, if that's what he had intended, then they will flourish in that respect. It's not, you don't have to force it in them. And no, like sometimes you work with them on some of these other things and they start to really blossom. Helicopter parenting, right? You know, we say it, we laugh about it, but it's actually happening. You know, like we see this, you know, these parents who are like so, you know, obsessed with every little thing, right? They don't let their child experience any bitter moments, right? Anything about like no disappointments. Okay, part of life is facing disappointments and being able to deal with them, right? And part of a good parent will gradually ease their children into this reality. And they'll ease them into like the sense of independence and they're making their own decisions and whatnot. Or my path should be their path. We have parents who are just like, okay, well, you know, this worked for me and this is what I wanted. And so I'm going to do the same thing for my child. Again, we talked about how, we gave you some examples about how that could be really not a good idea. So even though the principles are obvious, applying them requires thought, careful consideration, discussion with one's spouse. So I'm hoping for those of you who are married that you take what we're talking about, inshallah, and then you have sometime in the week, you have a good discussion with your spouse about that. Even if it's obvious, they say, okay, you know, let's say you've already figured it out. No, still discuss it and see, maybe there's room for improvement. Persistence, like a lot of these things, because other people don't do them, like we need to really have that motivation to continue doing them, not just starting out, but really continuing. And then we need monitoring and evaluation. We need to like always go back and see like, how are we doing? And we need reminders as well. Okay, now some people say that, and I'm drawing to a close because we're almost out of time. Some people say that I'm fine, my kids are fine, and my parents did a great job. And here I'm the proof of that, right? Alhamdulillah, right? So brothers and sisters, like this is something that we have to be careful about. First of all, maybe our parents did do a great job, but we weren't there capturing all the things that they did necessarily to understand what they did, right? Like sometimes parents are very wise and they do things in a subtle way. So unless like, you know, and sometimes the parents can't even explain and put into words. Maybe they forgot, right? Because now their kids have grown up. So we have to be very careful about this. And also, we also have to be careful about not being deceived by shaitan. You know, what I've seen in my own experience so many times is you have a child who, mashallah, in the first stage of development, they're like, just like awesome. Like they're memorizing Quran, like meaning the first 7 years. They're hifz of Quran and, you know, salamu alaikum, so beautiful. And, you know, so like this, right? And then a few years later, it's like, what happened to this kid? Right? Have you guys seen that before? I'm sure you've seen it, right? Okay, what's going on here, right? A lot of times, like the system is such that changes you make, you know, upstream, it takes a while for them to surface downstream. It takes a whole development stage, like when they go into the next thing. And then suddenly you see like utter rebellion. And we know these stories of people who the parents made huge mistakes upstream. And then later on, this is what happened. So you have to be very careful, right? Like there's a lot of hadith, even ayat about not being hasty. Hastiness is from the shaitan. We have to think about long-term when raising our children. There's this sort of saying, what got you here won't necessarily get you there. The principles I've applied until now, as my children are growing up, I need to be thinking about, well, what's coming up? And we have a hadith, famous hadith of the Prophet, every newborn is born on the fitrah, until his parents do what? Can somebody complete the blank? Finish the sentence? Unless his parents do what? So there's a famous hadith reported from the Prophet that every newborn is on the fitrah, meaning that they're born and they have that God-seeking nature until his parents do what? It's a super famous hadith. So it actually says that the parents are the ones who turn that child and make them adopt a different religious tradition. Okay, meaning that in Islamic ideology, every child is born as a Muslim, and that's why like people who convert to Islam, they tend to prefer to call themselves reverts, because they say that we were born as Muslim. It's because of upbringing that we were told that, okay, for example, taken to atheism or secularism or materialism, whatever it is, okay? So, point being that in this hadith, who is responsible for turning that child away? It's the parents, right? So parents play a huge role in the tarbiyah of children. Raising children is becoming more and more difficult. There's a lot of things that are, factoring into this, right? Whether it be, the breakdown in American culture, the LGBTQ agenda, secular school systems and their curricula, the role of teachers, pervasive media. It used to be the case that your home was a safe haven, but now you can be in one room reading Quran and your child can be in the other room and they can be exposed to a whole bunch of things. I want to give a quote here from one of the Maraji, Ayatollah Khamenei, Hafidhullah. He says it very clearly. He says that the enemy of humanity has decided to destroy families since approximately 100 years ago, and they succeeded in certain places. They managed to do so in those places where the people had drifted away from God. They failed to do it here, but they're doing their best. Right? This is a warning from one of our marjas, right? He was saying that family is under attack. Okay, so, I think that at this point, because we have reached 8 o'clock here, and the idea was actually to start up a little bit earlier, I'm going to pause, and inshallah we'll finish up this topic next time and then continue with our first principle. I did want to give 5 minutes here in case anybody has any questions or comments, and then inshallah we'll end up for today. So any comments, questions? Anybody? Yes, sir. Sure. So the question is, can you expand on a little bit more on the hadith of the 777? So there's like actually, it's a whole topic on its own, but I'll give like the brief, really high level summary. So we have numerous traditions from the Prophet and the Imams where they guide parents to shift their parenting strategy at key developmental stages in a child's growth. And those match up with 7 years. Okay, now there's numerous traditions, but the general concept in the first 7 years is one of really allowing the child to enjoy freedom and not for them to not feel restricted and for them to like really be that human dignity to flourish. Now, as they get close to 7, it might be at 6 years old, it might be at 7, it might be at 8, they will naturally start maturing, and now begins the next stage of development, which is one of a child really looking to follow a certain path. Like they're really looking for like guidance in how to do things in a way which is beneficial and successful. And so that's, we're told in those hadith that now they become like a slave. And a slave in the sense that they can take orders, they can take instruction. And you can see the children, we have, mashallah, educators here, numerous, and they'll say on their experience too that like there's a massive shift that takes place. And it's the readiness to like learn. They can really start, benefiting at this point. And then the last 7 years is one where the approach is more of like counseling, advising, almost like a partnership, but not an equal partnership, more of like one of like, they're now stepping up into like almost like becoming a peer. And so now that the strategy shifts in that time as well. So around these, there's a lot of discussions to be had about like, well, what does that mean? And how do we put that into practice when it comes to like this freedom? Because practically speaking, I mean, we live in a world where there's constraints, right? We don't have like unlimited time, unlimited resources, unlimited space. So that's the gist of it. Okay. Yes? Were you going to Yeah, so we have 8 sessions in this first course here, and I was thinking that in these 8 sessions of touching on the other topics, and then this topic of the temperance, I was thinking about for the next course, like part 2 of this, which would be like post Muharram, inshallah, depending on, you know, if there's a continued interest and feedback, we can go. But that one would take like a few sessions to go into them. So the question is that, let's say a parent has missed out on something. They didn't do the right actions at the right stage. Now, how does that work? Okay, so we actually had a slide for that, but I didn't get a chance to show it. Now I get a chance to show it. That we're working not alone here. We're not independent entities. We're just like agents. And the one who's actually doing the tarbiyah is the murabbi and the rabb of our children. We're just agents. So God knows that we're fallible, right? Like if it was required for a child to have a masoom upbringing agent, then he wouldn't have created the system of parents and all. He would have done things in a different way. He knows that we're fallible. But what he's looking for us is our best effort, you know, educating, really learning, taking that effort. We believe that God is the one who changes bad deeds into multiple good deeds, not just like he can undo it. He can actually take and change it. And, you know, we're told that in the hearts are in between the two fingers of the fingers of Allah. You know, two fingers, when you move something in two fingers, it's something very delicate, right? You're not using your whole hand. Like we have a surgeon here actually, and he can tell us about like how the delicacy of like finger movements, right? Meaning that God is completely in control of, you know, our children, right? So if we made a mistake, we have to acknowledge it, and then we need to compensate in some way. And really, really like turn to God and say, okay, I made this mistake, please help me in this thing, right? We have examples, so many examples in history of, you know, people who were on one path and then God intervened and they just kind of slowly switched a different way. Particularly around freedom though, if our child, if we were very strict and commanding in the first 7 years and now we're seeing that a lot of rebellion as our child enters the next 7 years, we need to see if we can give them some breathing room. Get it, let them get it out of their system, and then inshallah, once they fall into line, then we go back to this. So we need to kind of be gauging and learn when to advance and then when to retreat slightly, right? But not in a way, of course, where they're going to cross the red line, because now they're entering, some of them are entering into the stage where they're mukallaf, right? So they're responsible for the Islamic thing, so we can't like completely retreat. Okay, let's recite salawat, please. So just to recap, please join the Google Classroom if you're interested in taking this as a class. Homework will be posted soon. If you're interested in helping to arrange childcare, please speak to myself or maybe brother. You can speak to Brother Asad. If you have any feedback in general about the course, any suggestions, let's give that right now so we can make the changes for the upcoming classes. Thank you. I'll still be here if anybody wants one-on-one sort of topic or conversation.